our chair of the House. He has been here since 12 o'clock. And she indicated to me that she has to attend another meeting. I don't know who's the other person who wanted me to this that you know down. Okay. Yeah. I know that you've been here very since 9 o'clock. Yeah. I really thank you for it because that shows the seriousness you have. We are going to start, and I don't know whether everyone has the agenda that we have. No, it has been put up there. You can see that we have opening apologies, a briefing, and a briefing, and then closure. Now we are going to open the meeting. The meeting is officially open. We know that there are people who have gone to for oversight work. Some of them left yesterday. And it's difficult for us as Parliament really to program this according to what we want, because everyone has got a responsibility. But information is always there. We hope that in our next meeting we'll be referring to what is happening here now. And we can also provide the information to those who are not here so that we keep them along. So we do accept the fact that we have a few apologies here. I think the secretary is going to read out who has apologized.
Chair, with your permission, I'll just read the names of the members and perhaps provide the results. We have Honorable Mwenya Mabila, who has apologized. Honorable Deputy Minister Mokgopane Zulu. Members of the NCOP who are on NCOP Provincial Week. Honorable Zukiswa Swatmira. Honorable S. Ngoma. Honorable Dennis Robinson. Honorable Molebatsi. Honorable Beauty Zulani. Honorable Wai Kosa. Honorable El Maseko. Honorable Minister Mapisa Nagula. Honorable El Zwane. Honorable Deputy Minister Zou Kota Fredericks. Those are all the apologies we have. Oh, we also have for Honorable Kuno, who is at Scopa and she'll be joining us later.
Those are the apologies. I don't think we have any comment on the apologies, so do you want to say something? Honorable Whip?
Thank you, Jefferson. I also just want to apologize on behalf of Ms. Nkomo, the deputy who is indisposed.
Caring attributes. I think it will be advised. advise them and say, if we can really send, you know, a card just to, you know, to say that we really care about her, because I was told by one of the IFD honorable members told me about her sickness. For, I think it would be very, very, very honorable if it comes to our campuses. I thank you.
Yeah. That is a very good gesture, honorable David. You know, when I'm at home, I think about a lot of things. And it's one of the things that I thought really should be done of. Because I have been told personally when we came back that she was ill. And I called her and I spoke to her. I think since we have mentioned this, I think we are going to take it up as a committee to do that. So we are done with the apologies. I mean, can we go to our next item now? Our next item is a briefing by the Honorable House Chair on the CWP charter. Are you all right, Lady? I know you've got a bad question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, as well as the Secretariat and officials from National Treasury who are here. And thanks, Chairperson, for affording us an opportunity to brief the meeting about the need for the launch of the CWP chapter. Firstly, I just want to remind members that as South African Parliament was a member of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, CPA. CPA is a parliamentary forum which allows opportunities for members of parliament, those who are member states of CPA, to be able to reflect on issues that affect its member states, but also how collectively they can promote democratization and sustainable development in their respective countries. Within that structure, internationally, the women came together and felt it was necessary to have a forum of women parliamentarians who would also look at issues that affect women in legislatures and parliaments, but at the same time also continue to advocate for increased representation of women in decision-making, particularly in parliament and legislation. At a different level, it was also about how women parliamentarians can be advocates of issues of women in their societies, but also in solidarity with others, particularly in the member states of the CPA. Its headquarters is in London, and there is the executive, and it meets annually in a national conference in any of the member states that has been willing to host. It has got regions of which are, you know, make it either in terms of structural functioning. So South Africa belongs to the Africa region, whose headquarters is in Tanzania. And we pay an annual membership fee both to the Africa region as well as internationally. Last, just to say, in terms of the CPA, there are, let me say, structurally you have got organs, that's how they are called, organs of the structure, which is the CWP, the Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians. Then you have got SOCAT, which is the clerks, or as we call them here, the Secretary of Parliament. So there's a forum of clerks where they look at how, in terms of their responsibilities, how they could support technically parliaments and legislatures in their work. And then you've got branches who have branch representation in the executive committee of CPA, Africa region, as well as internationally. And then we've got the sub-regional reps who then represent the sub-region. The sub-regions of CPA in the Africa region are four. You've got Southern Africa, which in terms of the structure is different a bit from SADC. the CPA Southern Africa region will be South Africa, Namibia, Lesotho, and Swaziland. And then for the central sub-region, which comprises of Mozambique, Zambia, Malawi, and Botswana, and East Africa, which comprises of Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. And you've got West Africa, which is Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, and Sierra Leone. Gambia, which was part of West Africa, actually resigned from CPA because they couldn't agree with some of the principles of CPA, and they decided to withdraw. Zimbabwe also decided to pull out of the CPA, as you know, given some of the contentious relationships, particularly between Zimbabwe and the United Kingdom and some member states in the EU who form part of the CPA. So the configuration of member states in the sub-region are like that. In terms of the CWP, CWP in terms of its structure, you've got the steering committee, which will be comprised of the representatives of the sub-region, and the sub-regions in terms of participation in the steering committee, they rotate in terms of the country. Like our term, we had to finish the term when Comrade Mahinda Mfeketo was the member. Now the coordinating country of Southern Africa region is Lesotho from now until a period of 2018. And in Central Africa is Mozambique, the coordinating, and in East Africa is currently, sorry, it was Seychelles, but it's now going to be Mauritius. I forgot to include Mauritius and Seychelles as part of East Africa. And then in West Africa, it was Cameroon, and it's now going to be Nigeria. So those are the countries that then form the steering committee. And in terms of its executive leadership, is the chair and the vice chair who get elected in a conference of the CWP, which usually meets on the sidelines of the CPA conference. But the elected conference is every after 3 years. So this year, the elections were held in Mauritius, and Honorable Togo Tidi was elected as its chair. And next year, there will be an election of the vice chairperson. So that's the composition of the steering committee. What happens is that in terms of the branches, the structure of CPA, which will then impact also on CWP as an organ, has got branch representatives, which are the parliaments, that would include in South Africa the National Assembly and NCOP. South Africa's branch was formed or constituted last year. Every after the term of office of a parliament, in the next parliament, that parliament must launch its branch. So the branch of CPA in South Africa was formed last year, August. But what has happened is that the charter of the Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians was not lost. So what we are proposing is that we need to look at this formation, and given that we've got a multi-party forum, our suggestion would be it would be advisable that the Women's Multi-Party Caucus should actually be formally launched as a CWP structure. But it's a matter that you can deliberate, because we're looking at avoiding a situation where you can have many structures where you'll be called into many meetings, and you know it might be difficult. But it's a matter that we wanted to table in front of you, Mestory, and then we can agree as to who then become the subcommittee of the Women's Caucus that would be part of, which would be the unit of the CWP, and would be responsible for, you know, its activities working within the multi-party caucus. In other countries, actually, that's how it works, because of trying to avoid. But in other countries where they don't have a multi caucus, they form a charter, and that charter then also become
a caucus that does some of the work of the Women's Multi-Party Caucus. But I think it's a matter that we need to grapple with. I just thought this would be an appropriate structure where we formally present this. We already worked last year on a strategic plan, a three-year strategic plan, 2015 to 2018, which will guide the work of the CWP in the continent and also set up the rules and procedures around which we need to undertake our work. Next year, the conference would be in Imo State in Nigeria, which is one of the sub-branches. South Africa is a branch, but our provinces are sub-national branches. So therefore, they have participation in the CDA and CWP. They also have got their own chapters in their parliament. Next week, for instance, we've been invited to go to KZN. They've got a meeting of their chapter. The three others that are active in our country will be Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga. Pulukwane is active, but I'm not sure that they've launched their chapter now. One of the things when we made an assessment of the function of CWP, we felt that it is necessary to actually launch branches before the end of this year. Office State is also functional. So we said we needed to make sure that we encourage all those branches of the CPA who have not launched their chapters to actually do so before the end of the year so that it becomes active in the work of the CWP. So I just thought I needed to give that briefing, and the Multi-Caucus Steering Committee, guided by yourselves, will then advise us what would be the best age for the launch of the CWP structure of the South African branch of the CPA. I think that's the briefing I wanted to make, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the briefing. Congratulations, Chairperson. You know, in our last women's roundtable in Pretoria, we learned that a lot of things happened there from somebody who was briefing us. And I think before we can even engage with this, I would really ask you to elaborate a little and explain to the members of Parliament how South Africa participated and all the goodies that happened for South Africa. Yes.
Thank you very much, sorry, I was looking at the time because in the launch of the charter we thought we would give the detail and be able to invite other sub-branches for the launch. But just to say that in terms of South Africa's participation in the Women's Conference, we had all the sub-regions represented as well as the national branch. The issues that we looked at was in terms of the assessment of the performance of the CWP structures in the continent. As I said, there are reflections on that a number of pages haven't actually launched their chapters, but those that have launched, such as Rwanda, in terms of the continent, have actually done a lot of work. We also took stock of the work that has been done in the past year, particularly the sub-regional workshops that were convened, one which was in Gauteng, that yourself and some other members present here attended, and another one which took place in January in Tanzania, where we're looking at how to increase women's representation in Parliament. I must say that during the conference and in sharing of experiences, one of the interesting things was actually the electoral reform of Cameroon, who for a number of years hovered below 20% in terms of women's representation in their parliament. To be more specific, they were actually 18%. But they have increased their participation to 39% through reform of the electoral law, which women parliamentarians within their parliament actually pushed for its reform. What that law, in terms of some of its clauses, is that no
party list for candidates would actually be approved if it doesn't have a particular percentage of women candidates, and not just in the list, but in the electable position. So it's no more even an issue of a party. If the list goes to the IEC, it would immediately be rejected if women are number last in the list, and they are not in the first, maybe 10 of electable list. So they would send back head commissioners to the party to say your list doesn't comply with the law. Which was quite interesting, because for a number of years, the Cameroonian women had tried to rise to the struggle within parties, but they never were successful. But once it became the law of the country that binds election, that became just automatic. So from 18 in the last election, they actually moved to 35, the number of 35% the number of women representation. And they were also looking at issues of funding, because where women fight elections on constituency basis. In our situation, we are still lucky that even though, particularly local government level, women will be supported by their parties. In other countries, if you stand for the constituency, it's you and you. And you have to do the campaign, the branding, the lot yourself. So the issue was, how does the funding inhibit women's participation in the election? The other issue that was looked at related to the issue of electoral violence. How a number of women become victims of abuse, verbal abuse, and threats to their lives, which becomes then a hindrance that women decide not to put themselves up for elections for fear of being victimized. And therefore, some of the countries were sharing their own experiences on how they are grappling with legislation that would seek to protect, you know, women in terms of violence abuse, while at the same time appreciating that that is an issue for societal, you know, consciousness, where advocacy would also have to play much more of the role than the legal. But I must say that in terms of participation, South Africa's representation, which includes its sovereignties, did very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Teresa. It has also come to our cognizance that some of our members here did very well, and one of the things that we're told about is that the countries that were there actually refused to submit a name, and they repeatedly said they want to the chair of the NGOP to continue as a yes.
Sorry, ma'am. That related to, okay, let me just say that prior to conference, we actually lost the Treasurer General of the region. Some of you members who have been participating in CPA would know him, Honorable Mutenga from Zambia. He was usually known the double T, because he was not just the Treasurer of the African region, but he was also Treasurer International. He passed on in July, as well as Makinda, who was the once chairperson of the CWD from Tanzania, who also passed away in July. So the Africa region has made a proposal that for the international, they would want somebody from CPA Africa region to conclude the term of Honorable Mutenga. So the executive committee had reflected on the matter and made a recommendation that Honorable Mutenga, the chair of NCOP, should be the one that is nominated to conclude that position. When the matter was tabled in plenary, there was a bit of a challenge, particularly from West Africa, who wanted that you know, the position must be earmarked for West Africa because it's not fully represented at the moment in the structure. But the argument was that they have not been paying their membership, and the rules are very clear. If you don't pay your membership, you can't participate. But at the same time, even where they have been elected, they have not been doing their work as they should, so they can come and want designation. But the matter was sent back to the sub-regional caucuses as well as the sub-regional reps who sit in the expo in the international CVA structure. And all of them came back and say among themselves they actually don't think that there can be any other representation other than Kumeritandi. And it was very interesting because there was also a delegate from West Africa, the sub-region, who was among those who actually said he doesn't actually agree with his sub-region in the argument that they were making, because amongst people in that sub-regional representation who sit in Expo in London, the best candidate in their view would be Honorable Mujisa. So she was nominated, and that name will be forwarded for forward to the International Expo as well as Congress. You know that last year in the conference, Honorable Masego was elected as the executive chairperson of CVA Africa region. At the moment, one of the challenges that we had is that last year we were supposed to have an international conference of CPA. And among issues that we needed to deal with in that conference was the change of status of CPA. Because one of the problems at the moment is that CPA is not a diplomatic organization, nor does it have any multilateral status, because it's registered as a charity in London. And part of the challenges is that if it ceases to exist, all monies and contributions and assets will actually revert to the London Charity Authority. So members were saying, but you can't have an organization like that where from our countries will pay from our fiscals for the benefit of a charity of another country. One or more colonies were all equal, so the state has to change. Kaogeng in Cameroon meeting had moved a motion which was supported by both the Pacific as well as the Asian region and the African continent. But the meeting did not happen last year as it was supposed to because of, well, there were two issues. It was supposed to be in Pakistan. Other member countries were scared of going to Pakistan because of the tensions. But secondly, others decided to take a principled stand of not going because of the way in which Pakistan proposed to handle that meeting. Pakistan was insisting that they are not going to invite one of their branch Kashmir because they think Kashmir is not a country. It can't be a member because it's part of Pakistan. And India said if Kashmir is not invited, they are boycotting the conference. So it was a whole drama. At the end of the day, the Kashmir issue made the meeting not to continue. Yes. Part of the argument was that you can't subject a member in good standing because of the political questions that are not resolved between countries. So the conference didn't continue. This year the conference was supposed to be in Bangladesh. And I'm sure honorable members will know the challenges currently in Bangladesh. So a number of branches actually sent in their concerns that they don't think that their countries will agree that they put their parliamentarians at risk. The challenge now is that last year we converted the conference to an expo. And members are very concerned that you can't have 2 years in succession without conference. Because the expo doesn't have a standing of an annual general meeting, so it can't take decisions that otherwise must be taken by a Congress. The challenge now is that we don't have a host. And that's where we are. Botswana had said we'll go back after Mauritius and discuss with their parliament, and they've come back and said they are not able to. Uganda and Kenya, the same, they can't. So we're still waiting for any branch that can host. International said the branch that hosts will be given £500,000 for the hosting of the conference, basically paying for everything, given the circumstance in which we are in. Some of us are national branches, they were saying they would look at the matter, but we don't know whether one of South Africa's sub-national branches might be willing to host, given the time period that's there and the logistical arrangements that are involved. So the question of the CPA International is actually a cause for concern at the moment, because there are certain decisions that can never be ratified by ECFO, which are supposed to be ratified by Congress. But if there is no host, it means it can't host. In Africa region, the position is if there is no host, headquarters host. We made the same proposal to London that as a secretariat, because nobody else can host, you need to host, but London says no, they're not ready, they cannot host. So there is nobody at the moment who has offered to host an international conference, where this issue of the status actually must be resolved. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason, for the elaborate reading that you gave us. There's something for our brains really to chew. I wonder if we have people who would like clarification or questions. Honorable Samuel?
No, thanks, Chair. I don't have a clarification or questions to say. I just wanted us to probably formally adopt the position that we do need to launch the CWT branch here, and I also want to probably support the idea that the multi-party caucus be the one that is used to that idea. It will also probably help us as well to broaden our own understanding of the international politics, particularly in relation to women issues. Because most of the time we don't really grapple with these issues. And once we've got the CWP press launched, we are going to be forced to discuss these issues. So I thought probably we should do that. And I think the proposal was saying perhaps the time before the end of the year. And we should look at that. But when Chair, we looked at the date, it should probably be a full day thing, because it must also assist us to equip us with information. It must be in the form of a workshop, so that when we leave at lunch, we leave knowing more what the CWP is. That's my proposal.
Thank you, Chairperson. And the information from the Honourable Togo. Chair, I would like also make two briefs as well, official, on WIT. We often will receive invites from them, but like invites as an individual, and it's impossible for you to go and attend a conference somewhere and represent the country when you engage with women in your own country, especially in Parliament, because it's women in Parliament. It's in New York. I'm trying to check the invite here, but since there's no networking here. And sometimes I'm of as even if I'm not the committee members of a particular committee here representing women's workers, but looking at your very well made, you can go there, but the trend will be accommodation by attending engagement with the leadership here.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome the presentation and to congratulate Honorable Itisa for appointment as the Chairperson. And to say that I also support the idea of having a chapter for the WT and maybe caucus as well, this to become a structure to be utilized for the people. And just to say that, you know, it's good to participate in these regional, sub-regional, maybe and international processes, but at the same time also, we need to see to what extent they will actually benefit us in South Africa. So as we look at these processes, what they are offering, and look at how we actually galvanize our own machinery in South Africa to be in the position to come up with systems that will continue to help us to advance the cause of women in South Africa. Because So now, quite a number of activities have been neglected in terms of attention. And I think what will be good is if we come up with this structure, but look much more at how it's going to benefit us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join honourable members to congratulate Honourable Thokoza Khumisha for having been elected as the chair of the CWT. Chair, I want to support the view that was raised by Honourable Mafu that we launch our own branch and multi-party be confirmed as a as that structure. That's it.
Honourable David, that's the last end.
Congratulations, comrade, Honourable Thokoza Khumisha, for your appointment. And as you were given a report about hosting that Bangladesh not be able to host, and there is some budget that's been allocated, I'm of the view that can we seize that opportunity and host that conference. It can also be, you know, like a step towards also having our own chapter here in South Africa. We can form the chapter, and then we also propose that South Africa has the opportunity of hosting that conference that was supposed to be hosted in Bangladesh. Especially because there's a budget to host it. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. It is quite evident that we need to discuss this broadly in the multi-party. We can launch, maybe before we even have that launch, we sit down and talk to you so you can give us more clarity. The steering committee can sit with you so that we get more clarity and what is expected of us. Now, I think everybody agrees that we should launch. It's quite interesting, really, because I know for the fact that many people are concerned about the Commonwealth, and people think that some of the things have to be turned around. If we have a chapter here in Parliament, it's going to make us to participate, you know, and from a point whereby the members of Parliament have influenced whatever we take to the Commonwealth. And I think, well done, South Africa. I should congratulate all of the South African members of Parliament that went there. Thank you very much for your participation. And we think we should not disappoint you as leaders of this Parliament. We should take it up with vigor and participate and take it forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think there were two issues that members asked this question. One is women in Parliament, WIP. WIP is actually a network. It's not an organization. It was started by one of the women within the European Union community who felt that it was necessary to mobilize women across the globe who are in Parliament on issues that affect women, it created a platform for engagement. So they will have different meetings around the globe looking at specific issues that affect women in that area. The one that they had in Africa, I think last year, was actually in partnership with the AU, looking at Agenda 2063 and the women's issues, and what role can women in Parliament play to advocate Agenda 2063. The next one was actually a partnership between UN Women and women in Parliament, looking at how they can influence the Sustainable Development Goals Agenda, working within their Parliament as advocates to be able to do that. The other workshop that they held was together with the women. So they have these conferences, they can have six or so a year. They get sponsorship and partner with whoever and invite. They are not responsible for your travel or for your... It's just a network of women parliamentarians. If you're for money, you attend, you know. And for me, I think it's an issue where if the women's caucus reflect on it and maybe look at some of those invitations and think we would want to make an input on this forum, they will make necessary recommendation through a speaker for the participation. So it's not like a multilateral body like your UN or your CPA or your AU or anything. It's just women who felt it was necessary to have a network amongst women. So they invite across the board all women who are in Parliament. So those who are able to come, because let's say there is no mandate where you can say, I am representing South Africa if I go there. I mean, like the one that was in Addis, for instance, you had about 20 women from Kenya who came as women legislators, but who had transported themselves, accommodated themselves there. Sometimes they will call us obviously on issues of Kenya, but not necessarily that they were mandated by the Parliament of Kenya. So that's the issue. And Parliament cannot say to them, don't invite our members. It's difficult because it's a network. They will invite anyone who's in the mailing list that they have. The issue about the launch, Chairperson, let me just say, Honorable David, South African Parliament is already a branch. It has launched. It was launched in August last year. And what we might need, if we think South Africa can host, we will need to actually engage through the branch and particularly in terms of allocation of responsibility in Parliament, the Speaker is responsible for ITU and CPA is Honorable Mudise. So we can talk to Honorable Mudise and say we think it might be good for South Africa to consider, you know, hosting. Maybe it's a matter that the branch might look at. But that's a CPA branch, not CWP. So it's broad CPA. I think we could. And if I can relay the message to Honorable Gandhi, whether they thought about it, and what would that mean in terms of budgetary requirements. Will it be within the £500,000, or will it be more? And will it be something that between now and then South Africa can work on it? Because you need a lot of logistics, you need to work with Foreign Affairs, I mean, Department of International Relations, you need to work with Home Affairs, and because of the visa issues. And maybe within the time frame, even if the money may be there, it may not be logistically possible. You are going toward the peak season, you may not actually find hotel space to accommodate people if you were to go to them now. So all of those issues that considering to hold, you will have to look at and its feasibility to do so, particularly this year. But with regards to the issues of meeting with the steering committee, I'm available much to meet with the steering committee just to go through issues. But what is interesting is that if you look at the agenda of CWP, it's not different that much than the agenda of the multi-party caucus, except that its agenda is very narrow.
because it looks precisely at increasing representation of women in parliaments and legislatures, as well as looking at issues of electoral reform and how we could make sure that legislatures, as women, I mean, one of the issues that we are dealing with, for instance, is in the strategic plan on gender budgeting. How do we as legislators, as women, while we have got our ideological positions, but at what stage can we sit as women and say, what is in the interest of women? How do we review this law? It may not be gender budgeting alone, but it may also be when we sit together in the Women's Caucus and say, but if you look at the law on mining, doesn't accommodate women, it doesn't advance the interest of women. Or when you look at Public Service Commission, we could say, when you look at the representation of women in the public sector, we as women parliamentarians, we don't think, you know, this... So sometimes it's about how we could work to advance those interests of women working, you know, together. That's why in our proposal was that rather than having a different meeting where you say you are going to set up a structure that is independent of the Women's Caucus, it will be future. That's why we're proposing that the Women's Caucus should actually be the CWP structure. But obviously, you'll have to have a launch, have a workshop where we can deal in detail with what CWP is, what the strategic plan says, what are those issues that we can deal with, and we can also invite the sub-branches, like when they gave us to come and assist them to launch their sub-branch and the sub-organ of the CWP here in Western Cape. So if you invite wise, you can also invite other women who are been pushing the gender agenda in our society as activists, academia, whatever, invite them to that workshop and look at how we could work together, particularly on this issue, the gender commission, the others. But our view is that rather than setting another parallel structure, it's important to have this as a platform in which CWP will operate. It reduces the cost, it enables us that we don't go into various meetings, there are many, so we could look at how some of those issues that are there could be dealt with within the multi-party caucus. And indeed, Memachagi is correct. CTA of CWP as a women's organ, while it's an international structure like UN Women or whatever, our interest is to look at how do we change the conditions of women in our country as legislators. How can we advocate some of those issues, you know, that will help to change the conditions of women? But how do we leverage the experience of other countries and how can we learn from each other to be able to do the work that we want to do in our own country, but also in solidarity with others. For instance, one of the things that West Africa asked was, is it possible to have a mission this year that goes to Nigeria and Ghana? Ghana is going for its election. But the concern is that there is, if you look at already the campaign now, there are few women who have put themselves up for parliament. And the concern is that if there is no intervention, and if there's no voice of women across the continent, you know, those women may not actually feel excited in participation. Similarly, in Nigeria, it's not just about support girls. If you look at where Nigeria was before the last election, they've actually gone down in terms of women representation. And the concern is, what can we do in solidarity to also put pressure on some of those governments and societies to reform their law so that it allows for more women participation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we have dealt with the item. Thank you, Chairperson. We are going to go to the next item. And the next item on the agenda is a briefing by Treasury on a VAT exemption on 100,000 gender-based budget. I think we all know that this has been a campaign in many countries, the issue of sanitary products.
and the gender responsive packaging. In 2015, in our roundtable, this was a concern of the tax, that is tax on the sanitary products. And it has also arisen in the roundtable that we had recently. And I think the concern of us bringing the treasury to, I mean, give us a presentation on the VAT on these products, and also give us a presentation on the responsive budget that we have been talking about. We are going to start. I don't know how do they feel, which one you want to start with. Because I see you've got two presentations.
Yeah, I'm going to run them back on back.
Back on back.
Yeah.
So you are expecting us to ask questions at the end of both the presentations?
Yes.
Okay. I think we go.
Okay. Thank you, Jay, and thank you for inviting us. I think, needless to say, this is a very important topic for us to look at, and it does get us just to think through, I think, the gender sensitivity, not just in the budget process, but we are going to get in the tax process as well. I think the presentation was working, but let me start. So I've got my colleague Yanga here. and we don't have copies, do we? Oh, you've got copies, okay, great, okay. So I'll start with the one that said briefing on request for VAT exemption. So we thought we'd start with the specific before we look at the broader budget issues. So I did, in a slide, make the error of...
Sorry, I just want to make sure that everyone got a copy of the presentation. You don't?
VAT exemption, that's what it said.
I mean.
Okay, so in the first slide, I think firstly, just there was a misunderstanding. We did have a colleague from the budget office as well. But there was a presentation, I think, to the Department of Women yesterday, and I think there was some confusion about for them coming here as well. That's why I'm going to do both presentations. But just so that members are not confused, Yanga and I deal with tax policy, so we deal with the revenue side of the budget, and our colleagues, who everyone calls the budget office, they deal mainly with the expenditure side. They deal with fiscal policy, but they deal with spending by government departments. I think, just on the tax side, just to remind ourselves, when we came in 1994, the basic way in which individuals were taxed, there was a you were taxed as a joint household. So it was assumed that there was a husband and wife household, and it was husband and wife, no other progressive approach to these things. But you had a married person, not a married person, or a married woman. That's how tax legislation said, okay? So different, so it seems like a married woman wasn't a person, but you know, that's how it was defined. It's how it was, maybe it should be unmarried woman. But that was the definition, okay? And so I think there's a bit of a typo there. But so it should be married person, not a married person. No, no, it's fine. Or married woman, okay? Don't know why they need a special category there. You know, we did away with those. It was the first things that the Democratic government did away with the above concepts, and what we did was we started taxing individuals, be they men, women, married, not married. Okay, we didn't then discriminate in our tax system. So I think that certainly on the tax side, we started very early with these issues, some of these gender issues. Now, the difficulty with tax policy is that it's one thing about who pays the tax. The thing that you've got to watch, and perhaps we haven't put this in the slide, is the word incidence, okay? Who actually pays for it? So let me give you an example. When you go to a shop and you pay whatever tax for a product, ultimately it's not the shopkeeper or the business that pays the tax. They will charge the tax onto the consumer. So ultimately it's the consumer pays. So even if the business pays the tax, ultimately it's the consumer who's going to pay. That's why with corporate income tax, the way we look at it is when you have a tax on businesses, effectively that tax is passed on to the customers. So even though it's not the customer who pays the tax directly, so it's important to understand who ultimately really pays the tax. It's not the person who actually pays, sends a check or the electronic payment to SARS. It's ultimately the customer. Now, that's important to take note of because trying to figure out who actually pays the tax is actually not straightforward. It can be pretty complex to figure out ultimately who would pay for tax. But certainly on the issue of, I think, on sanitary pads or towels available to women, I think certainly in the Treasury there's no debate about it being critical for development, particularly for young girls in school who may be missing days. In fact, I thought Yana had a wonderful story as we were preparing this slide, and I really think she must talk about it. I know it's her late mother who was a headmistress at the school, but perhaps you can say what your mother did, even though it wasn't policy, Yana.
Okay, what my mother did was that if a girl is if they take Lavulawu High School, so if a girl is a period, you have to go and mark a register and you get a pass for the whole day so that you can come back to school the following day. So she was dispensing pads at school using the budget that they were given and also the school fees because she did not want absenteeism from school. So that is the way she did it, using what was available at that time because girls were missing school because they didn't have pets. So she was dispensing them from school.
Yana is an expert on text, not just on her mother, so she's going to go through the hard slides when we go through this. But I think, Chair, the key issue is for us in the Treasury is how to make sanitary pads available to all who need it. Because, you know, is it on the tech side? Or is it on the expenditure side? Because obviously, on the tax side, if anything has a price, then there's a tax. But if it costs nothing, there's no tax. So is the issue making it freely available, or is the issue that you want it to be cheaper? Because the badges would, in theory, bring down the price by 14%. I think our sense is that the issue is really not really a tax issue, and we're not running away from the problem. It is, I think, about making sanitary pads freely available, which means that it becomes an expenditure issue. Much in a way, I guess, for some of us men, there's certainly condoms available in literally most toilets today in South Africa. So the issue is, do you want to have an appropriate way for women to have access to sanitary pads? I think that's the question that we think you need to answer. So that's why I'm going to deal with the budget issues later, but we thought, just since you've asked us the question, and we can cut the text presentation, but we can just quickly go through it. I'm not going to spend too much time, because it really, I don't think, offers a solution. But we do have a solution. That's the important message that I want to get across. And the question is just that, what is the solution? How do we do it? But let me just answer on the case of tax, why it's not a solution. Because largely, the tax objectives, if you move to the next slide, is obviously to fund government, to fund education, health, whatever government departments spend on, and salaries for most of us in this room. But the tax also has an important redistribution function in taking funds from rich households to poor households to essentially provide services for poor households. That's one of the objectives. And then, of course, there's other objectives. In today's world, it's not just for heavenly reasons that we have tax, but we have, for example, excise taxes, or more popularly known as sin taxes on tobacco, on alcohol, we want to have one on carbon, and soon I hope members don't have too much sugar. All of those things have sugar. This one doesn't, okay? That helps it, okay? So that's the intention of government. I should add that every tax that we have, or there's three big taxes in the system. It's personal income tax, corporate or company income tax, and VAT. And these three taxes raise about 80% of all tax revenue. The other taxes that we have are really small. But among the smaller ones, the biggest are fuel levy, customs, and we've seen some of these excise taxes. They don't raise a lot of money, but and most of the other taxes hardly raise much money. That's why it's odd when people say, but you're getting a sugar tax to raise revenue. To be honest, if you wanted revenue, we just don't give fiscal drag. We don't reduce the personal income tax, or we don't adjust the thresholds. That gives us 16, 20 billion every year easily. Sugar tax, and that gives us little money. Okay. So, but the important point is each tax doesn't try and achieve all the objectives of taxation. So while the personal income tax is a main tax where we want to redistribute, it doesn't mean that on the tobacco tax, we want excise, we want to redistribute. That one, in fact, may even be in a jargon, regressive, because it depends, it falls on all smokers, and it often is that many more poor people smoke relative to the income or do more smoking than rich people. So it may be that it hits poor people harder. But in that case, we actually want to discourage them to smoke. So not all taxes are regressive, but the tax system as a whole is progressive. Okay. VAT falls somewhere in between. It's sort of, it could even be mildly progressive, but it could, but it normally seems to be regressive. But it just depends, and we'll get to the issues of zero rating and so on. So we move on to the next slide. I think for all of these reasons, we say that, Tesla is the last point in the previous slide. Tax is actually a blunt tool. Because it applies to everybody, it's very hard to say tax don't affect this group of people, or you want more funds for that area, because it applies to everybody. And so what happens is when we lower tax, generally, it means that rich people actually get a bigger benefit than poor people, because obviously rich people pay more taxes, if you look at it absolutely. Not from a percentage, I'm talking of the amounts. Okay. So when you lower a tax, you may well undermine the redistribution and revenue objectives. You may have less redistribution, you may have less revenue. So that's why I think for us in the Treasury, as I said, the tax system is progressive, but more targeted expenditure is the best way to reach poorer communities. And similarly with PEDS, I think with sensory PEDS, I think we're saying that that's a better way to actually reach out. And especially since you also possibly want sensory PEDS to be freely available. So the issue of tax actually falls away because 14% on zero is obviously zero. But just for the record, let me just say, move on to the next one. You want to take over? Okay. But it's a hard question. This is the history of the tax of the VAT system. There's always an issue of can you remove VAT? Can you either zero rate or make VAT exempt? Now,
in 1991,
we started zero rating. First with Brown, Gray, and Maysville, and then a bit later with a few more basic items that were included. And there's quite a big difference. You can do three things with that. Firstly, you can either have a different rate, like in some countries you've got multiple rates, you have 14% for some, you have 5% for some. The problem when you do that is that administratively it's very difficult and the scope for abuse is very high. So South Africa is seen as an international, having an internationally excellent rate system because we don't have multiple rates. We just have one rate. The other way to do it is zero rating. So that when you go, in a sense, the product is still paying a tax, but it's 0%. But the difference is they can claim on the inputs. The other way is that it's totally exempted, it's zero, but in that case they can't claim back. So there's a small distinction there. I don't want to go to the detail, but that's the Angagoya system.
Mine is the overview because the proposal was to exempt VAT, so we want to give a general overview of the VAT system and how this can fit, or we think that it cannot fit within the current VAT system. As Momoy said, we've got zero rating and for exempt items. In 1993, we zero rated 9 basic food items. It's showing in slide 9. These are the basic food items. The other ones were zero rated, the other ones were exempted. So in 1993, we zero rated 9 basic food items, and the VAT has increased from 10% to 14%. And the policy objective for zero rating some of the items was to address the regressivity of the VAT system, as Mama said, that VAT has got an element of being regressive rather than progressive. And however, public opinion is very strong in favor of making the zero rating of foodstuffs. So when we have to choose, and then we were told that these are the basic foodstuffs, so we have to zero rate them. In 2013 and 14, we have to calculate the cost of the foodstuffs, 19 foodstuffs that were now zero rated, of which the VAT is forgone, and it was 20.1 billion of VAT revenue forgone. Hence now we are at the question to say, is it better to exempt it from VAT or zero rate it, or is it better to have targeted programs? Because when you zero rate, everyone benefits, even if you are rich. And then we think that the South African VAT system is a good example of modern VAT that has relatively few exemptions, zero ratings, and exclusions. And VAT is the most second important source of revenue in the country after PIT, because VAT always performs. As we have said in the earlier slide, VAT, personal income tax, and corporate income tax accounts to 8% of the revenue. So VAT is the important source of revenue for our country. And then we come to zero-rated and exempt supplies. The following goods and services are zero-rated. We've got your exports that are zero-rated, the 19 basic food items, paraffin, fuel, international transport, farming inputs. And those that are exempted are like your non-related financial services, educational services, residential accommodation and public roads, and rail transport. So you can see the list of goods that are exempted is less. And then the basic foodstuffs that are zero-rated in South Africa state is grounded. Those are your basic foodstuffs. And then it was even difficult for us to come to this conclusion because each and every year you find that you are being lobbied to add some more on the zero-rated items. So Treasury will have to reach the balancing act of what to do next. And we are saying that there is more requests for VAT concessions. Over the years, the Minister of Finance has received several requests for VAT exemptions. And then below we can list the items of which we have received the request for VAT concessions. Household candles, books, electricity and water, red meat, maheu, security related expenses for private individuals, canned vegetables, toll fees, and now we've got this request for sanitary towels. So our question is, what next? What can we include in the item? What can we not include? And as Momo has said, that we feel we are passionate also about the proposal for the sanitary towels, but is that the best tool to address this issue? And then we've got here the CAT Commission and the VAT studies that show, as Momo has said, that providing relief to the poor through exemption and VAT rating is likely to be both unfounded policy and ineffective social policy, because as we have said, that when you zero rate or you exempt the food item, even the rich people will get to benefit. So it's generally not working. So we look at that, or we look at the expenditure item to supply pets to the schools or to the clinics. And then here we've got the OECD, whereby say consulting taxes are the way to the future, of which we know that in South Africa maybe we may not be there, but we must try to reach that balance. And then in 2007, Treasury commissioned a VAT study. And then in that VAT study, a VAT system with the smallest number of exemptions, zero rating and lower rates is desirable, of which that's where South Africa is. Efficiency and simplicity considerations should dominate, and equity and other objectives should be pursued through the expenditure side of fiscal policy. That's what you are maybe proposing today to the committee. The VAT has been a key instrument for securing macroeconomic stability and growth by placing domestic revenue mobilization on a sounder basis. That's what it says, because we collect a lot of revenue for VAT, and the revenue we collect for VAT, we have to fund other programs as well. And then now we on this slide show why more of the concessions are not deemed to be effective. That is very important for the test policy today, because when people come to us, zero rate books, because poor people have to be able to attend school and read. So we have to look at these issues. Is providing a VAT concession better than maybe doing it through the expenditure side? Because when you do a VAT concession, you erode the tax base, thereby reducing the ability of the VAT system to be optimal in generating the necessary tax revenue. You create a precedent for intergroups to lobby Treasury, because now when you do this, you come next to say, yeah, you did this for sanitary towels, what about books, what about candles? So it just creates a platform for being lobbied, and then it's difficult maybe sometimes. And then you accomplish little way in the way of redistribution, because as I've said, you're gonna exempt pets, and then even rich people will be able to get pets. So it's not achieving the goal of poor people not getting pets, so it's achieving everyone.
And it's not the few rich people. I think in all of these, the biggest portion of benefit is then with teacher households.
Mm.
So it actually does cost a lot of money. So we're just giving you the general, but I'm just saying that generally that's the case. So one of the other ones is the 70 pages, is a typical case, and that's why we want to be clear. You know, we fully support what the objective is to make them freely available. But the other one that's also very hard is books. It's been a long campaign to get zero rating. But again, the benefit goes the wrong way in terms of income. So we just finish up. Don't think we need to...
Yeah, and another thing, as Momo said, zero rating may not significantly reduce the price. In some instances, it's not even passed to the consumer. So we welcome the proposal, but our key to you is that can we maybe look at the expenditure side so that it can be more achieve the objectives better than the base energy. Thank you.
And I think Eliana, let's just get on to the next slide. As Eliana has said, the issue is really that
If they are presenting solution, why don't we give them chance to present that solution and then we engage on the solution? Are we of the same opinion?
The thing is, while I hear the solutions, but I'm not sure whether we shouldn't deal with the principle which were being presented, because without preempting the solution, just from the presentation, it was very clear that the solution is moving towards the expenditure side of the issue, hence looking at the budgeting. So I don't want to be presumptuous. I wanted clarity as to why does it seemingly become the difficult on the revenue side of the tax issue. I hear the argument about how VAT has not been used and how it's not passed on and so on, but the same question could be thrown back when you look at expenditure size. Because in all dealing with the challenges as it relates to nutrition schooling scheme, which has been a perennial problem. So if you move it on the expenditure side, to what extent will you be able to manage that reality? If you look at, you say Department of Education and Health, maybe the ones where through budget you can increase so that the delivery happens, but we all know some of the challenges that have been there on the delivery of textbooks. So if you say you're going to put it at that level, does it become a responsibility of the Department of Education at a primary level? Or, I mean, basic education, for instance, what happens at tertiary education, are you going to make it part of increased subsidy on fees? I'm just saying that I don't think the argument, in my view, is well convincing to say it would be better handled if it's on the expenditure side. So that's the question for me that I have, that have you looked at the other argument on the other side to say what is the minimal risk? And I hear the issue about the reach. It's the same argument we went through when we looked at the issue of water. Thank you, ma'am.
For my eyes, I have blinded by the fingers. I think most of the members are interested in having the resolutions. Let us just hear the resolutions. And then from the resolution we can expand. I'm looking at the time that we have. Can you give us the resolution?
Yeah, no, and maybe just ask just a broader address on what was this question as well, which I think is important. I think the issue here is some things, if the issue is if you want it free, then I'm saying tax is not even an issue, because then there's no VAT anyway. If the issue is to make it cheaper, with the state in VAT away, in theory makes it 14% cheaper. There's still a lot of issues, like with books, where we could show that 14% won't all go to the consumer. It may be nothing, it may be 4%, because it's the people in between who actually will take up the benefit. Obviously, with these things, you look at international studies, what's happening in other countries, and so on. But the big argument is really that in the VAT system, even the zero-rated goods we have now lead to a lot of leakage, and the issue is really more to, can we limit the number rather than increase the number. Obviously, if people are going to get paid, it's not going to be free. They're going to go and pay a price at some store. So that's where the leakage makes a difference. So if the tenancy pays, if we think people are going to pay for it, then affordability still comes in, and I guess for very poor communities, the issue of access still comes in. But I still make the point. I mean, we still have to prove our case. We can't just say the rich benefit more proportionally and so on. The kind of answers we're giving on VAT in particular, because we were asked the question specifically on VAT, we were just trying to say that in the VAT we're actually trying to close down even the exemptions and the zero rating because it creates huge leakage. It's really not beneficial from that perspective. And let me say, Chair, there are even other issues, you know, which would be interesting to talk to them sometimes on other gender issues in the tax system. Because we were, for example, approached by the previous Premier in KZN, and he had a whole project with widows. And we went into what are the issues on death of the husband, what happens, okay. A lot of those issues we found don't actually relate to the tax, but relate to a lot of the legal processes. Mm. And the fact that, for example, you know, let's say the husband has died, that's how they put it, it goes the other way as well. The wife is working, starts getting some sort of annuity from the husband's pension, but doesn't get taxed on it, and it ends up with a big after a year when it gets assessed. They didn't realize they had to pay tax. So, you know, they get hit with a real time bomb. Don't want to raise for today. I'm just saying that there are, I think, issues on the tax side, and it would be good to look at it. So we're not certainly coming here to say there's no gender issues and so on. But with regard to this, and to go on to the budget side, so I'll deal with it. It's also a more general presentation. But I guess what we're trying to say is, on the budgeting side, we've striven, I think, in the last few years. Certainly, there was a women's budget initiative that was launched in South Africa. It was Craig's governor who sort of led this. We had our tips about how you approach this from a gender perspective. Because if you look at the budget, and certainly many countries began to look at how gender responsive is a budget. These initiatives in many countries actually have been abandoned. Not because I think the idea was a good one, but I guess the issue is, it gets back to the word that I used earlier on the incidence. Where do you assess the gender sensitivity in the budget process on the expenditure side? Certainly, I think in India, it's been taken up in a bigger way. Move on to the next slide. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that expenditure, and to understand the incidence, one really needs to go department by department. In a way, like the details are in the spending. So, if you look at gender mainstreaming, the issue is, if you take expenditure, let's say if it's the Department of Social Development, there it's much easier to see at the first level what goes to women, what goes to men. Okay. The harder issue is when in giving a grant to women or men, how much goes to other women or men from their same income. Okay. So I'm using that as an example to show you the difficulties. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't measure those. And so what you need to do is, when you give grants, you have a particular set of measures, and certainly I think in the Treasury, that's where we've been focusing on getting better information. If, for example, you look at the Department of Human Settlements, then the issue is, how are houses allocated, how many houses are river-headed houses. Obviously, even if a house is given to a male, how many women benefit and so on. So,
can I I'm not sure where.
Okay. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things to give the. I saw the committee wanted. Let me get to the solution. Okay.
Excuse me.
I'm going to get to the solution. Okay. So because what I wanted guidance. Yeah. Okay. So I guess the solution would be saying.
No, from where I'm sitting here, I think I'm sharing.
what you are doing now is not what we need of you two. And we don't have a lot of time. We are here because we are interested in the set. And the responsible budget, since now we are engaging this, we can still have time for it. But now you are spreading us around. We don't know what to do. Can you give us solutions and then we're going to deal with it?
So the solution would be that on the expenditure side, make budgetary funds available either through the Department of Health and the health budget and then sometimes through departments like education to make sanitary pads freely available, certainly to, for example, at schools, universities, and so on. So you would do that through the relevant departments. I think the issue then is for other parts of society, how to target. So that's why I use the example of like condoms seem to be available in most public places. In the same way, can you get all government or public institutions to provide them in a place that's available for free? So we're saying that should be done through the expenditure side. Obviously, what you will get is people who are at a higher income level would prefer, I don't know, maybe they may not like the quality that's available in the public sector, they would have to pay, and they would still have to pay VAT in the system. I guess what we would want for clarity is, our members saying that they would want everyone to be exempted from that, because it's not an issue where people are, it's made available freely through the budget system. So that would be the solution.
No, I think I'm going to give a chance to the members now. If we could at least take 3 minutes for each. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as the numbers go. One.
Thanks, Chair. I think we must start from the principal part that women, they find themselves to they are forced to use a sanitary towel. It's not a choice. We cannot treat it as if it's a choice thing. And when you talk about giving example of condoms can, if you want, can control your hormones. You can control that. But because the government wanted to come up with the solution of the problem that we have in the country, that's why they are railing those condoms. The two are not comparable. So the issue is you must remove this tax from sanitary towel for all women because it's not their choice. It's not given, so you cannot punish us for having been given that by God. Actually, you are going to help those that are putting this tax. And that does not mean that you will not provide for those for the need, because one of the caring this government which is supposed to be caring for its citizens is to support those that need assistance. You will continue to do that in the schools, in the universities, but the tax must go. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, and the issue of the schools and health and all this, people have said many a time, it's politics, that is why we are talking about this now. Number two.
Thanks, Chair. Just adding to what Honorable Semenyo was saying, this is not a luxury, it's a need. If you look at international studies across the world, there's been many studies. One example is the Ghana study, where they did to assess the impact of children who miss classes because of being on the period, the menstrual cycle, and the level of their dropouts. Now, if we were to talk about this, that's something is not necessary, it's a need. Now, my concern is the team from National Treasury, you are tiptoeing around the issue. Yeah. That's my problem. You knew exactly what is the concern, even if there might have been a suggestion of veg exemption, but you knew exactly there's been an outcry in this country from many gender activists, from women, from teachers, from mothers, saying we need a solution. Now, what we expected to come here, it's a presentation that says, okay, this is what you're proposing, but it's not working. This is a definite. Gender budgeting is something that is there, but in the long term we can look at that. But it's on various issues. We have a need now. There's an issue that has been proven to say it impacts more on our girls' children, especially in schools. Now, we can't leave this matter to be a resolution or a matter that of concern by NGOs and everybody else, while government is sitting and folding its arms instead of providing solutions. Now, if you say to us, this can be done in the Department of Health, what we expected from this presentation from this, because you deal with, you're currently on the medium-term budget cycles. In the amendment, what are you proposing to be a solution? Why is it that can be put aside? If you say, starting from this level of budget, we can be able to say to you, but this is a ring-fenced allocation to Department of Health for sanitary house provision. We know exactly this is what is going to come. And I think what we should be, as members of the Parliament globally, is to have this incorporated into the Minister of Finance, into the speech, so that we are assured and the country is assured that national treasure, it can be left to Minister of Health. It's not a matter of Minister of Health alone, it's a national issue. Therefore, we expect from the side of treasury, together with the minister, to have looked at this matter, allocated a budget, whether the budget sits is not important. You can have a delivery of that budget. Somebody, if it's health, it's fine. But we want assurance that this is a matter that is being considered, that is being put on the table, and we are trying to find money. I think that's what we are expecting.
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, I cannot really understand that our government, they have prioritized education and health. And with the same way, our children, our girl children, are being affected by not attending full days of calendar year at school. So if ever our government is prioritized education and health, and also with the vision of the Department of Health saying that healthy living for all, and I think really the pets issue, they are also part of the gender, and it's also part of the healthy living lifestyle. It's part of education and it's part of health that is being prioritized. So I think this one, it should be done like yesterday. This is a gender issue. If ever nutrition can be provided at school, so it be with the pets. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jefferson. Actually, I think we are missing one issue, and I want to take you to President Zuma's State of the Nation address in 2011 when he said, and I quote, the state will provide free services related to sanitary health for the indigent, unquote. So my question then really comes to the point, why is it 5 years later and Treasury has not heeded the call of the President? Because here it's in the State of the Nation address where the President said, this is a problem, we must provide free sanitary towels for schools who cannot afford them. So I think it's really good that we are all on the same page to say that we want to make sure that Treasury gives us answers today as to what is the plan going forward. Because at the end of the day, if health, the Department of Health can successfully roll out free condoms, even flavored ones, ones that are not noisy, ones that are funky and fun and flavored, then why must our schoolgirls be denied the constitutional right to education? They are denied the constitutional right to education because they cannot access sanitary pads. And I think we must say, as a woman of this parliament, you know, condoms are, you can go around parliament here, a packet of condoms are lying around everywhere. To me, that's wasteful expenditure. That money should be directed to poor schoolgirls who are denied their education. And I think if you read any study, they are saying now that there are millions of schoolgirls who on a monthly basis have to sit at home because they cannot access sanitary products. What happens is they fall behind in class time, they fall behind in writing tests, and we are then effectively denying these schools of them their right to education. So I think really what we need to know today from Treasury is where we find the budget, will it be health and education and social development together? And I think for us, going forward, we need to know in every, if there's a condom dispenser, we will get these fancy flavored condoms now. I want to see a dispenser with sanitary products for schoolgirls who cannot afford them. And I think it's not even negotiable. Otherwise, I don't know, damage paying lip service to some of the provisions in our constitution and women's empowerment. Thank you, Jesus.
I just want to propose that the Treasurer responds to this question. That now I'm on the auto board.
Chair, let me be clear. We fully support what all the members are saying. So we don't differ. We see it's an absolute priority to get sanitary pads to women. And in particular, we're talking of young girls. We're very mindful of the schooling disruption. And I think what Honorable Tagoda raised earlier, we also agree sorry. I know for so long, it's just how long I know. I'm sorry. Yes, Honorable Visa, okay. So the issue really has been that, and there are delivery problems, so we agree that those are issues. Now, yeah, don't make excuses. We came as a tax team and we were asked on VAT. But we don't want to say we're not going to answer. I mean, of course, we should be making sure that in our budgets, amounts have been privatized, and if they have, why is it not actually reaching where it should? Most of the issues raised by members, I think the issue is so far free sanitary pads be made available. So that's why I'm saying the VAT issue doesn't even enter when you look at the issue. No. Okay, maybe let's. Sure, okay. Okay, so what I'm just saying is that what I hear from members here is that it should be made freely available. Yeah. And the question was, President Zuma had made that commitment. I'm not an expert on the expenditure side, but I'm going to go and check where the allocations were, if they were made, if they were not made, why not. So I'm saying that we are certainly not, I think we hear the urgency, we hear the need for priority, and ultimately, we need to get to the expenditure side and on the departments to find out where the allocations were and so on. On the VAT issue, I think we would like to hear from members because VAT only applies when the price is not zero. It's more than, there's a price to it. There are more complexities on any form of VAT exemption and zero rating. Generally, I don't think that's to say that we're saying it's not a priority for women or any human being. But anyway, Yanda, do you want to head on? I'm getting into trouble here with all the women now. I'm feeling distinct.
No. Can I come here? Through, sir. Yes. I think really a tiptoeing around. You are not responding to what we need here. Can we allow number 5, which is the chair, to come in and the other so that the time is, yes, we are coming to you, 5:30.
Through the chair, and thank you once again to the team from Treasury for their presentation. One understands your dilemma, but I think the issue really in my view is twofold. From a principal point of view, I think what we're dealing with is the issue of rights and dignity. And what we're saying is that there are examples in which, as government, we took deliberate decisions that addresses that principle. 1994, I don't think it was a mistake that President Mandela made a pronouncement that women, pregnant women, can go to public hospital without any fee. It was that principle that appreciated that you have to deal with the particular issue of dignity and rights for women. I also don't think we've not dealt with that issue in our society when it comes to the issue that addresses the issue of social, you know, development. The issue of water, which I raised earlier, you could have argued the same, municipalities could have argued the same, but you had to say, how do you make issues of accessibility and equity for all? Appreciating that you need the redistribution mechanism, but at least everyone in society, when you talk about basic human rights, access to water was one of those. And that is why your 6,000 kiloliters of water became the threshold. And that if you then want to have more than that, you can then pay. So I'm saying you have the gradual realization, or rather progressive realization, of how we could meet those basic rights in our constitution. And what I'm pleading for is that that as an instrument addresses this point on one hand, that we are appreciating that for women rights and their human rights, which they are, and this is one very gender-specific, if I would say women-specific rights, which doesn't affect anyone else in society other than women. And we're saying, if we talk about women's emancipation in our society, looking at women's empowerment, you cannot deal with this issue because of the consequences which some of the members of parliament have already highlighted, its impact on women's progress. And we're saying, progressive realization, dealing with indigent, realizing what the president has said, that one which is free access in terms of dispensing and whatnot. But we say there's a whole lot of holes that we need to deal with where we're saying reduce the VAT. The VAT. Not reduce, do away with VAT for pay. But let me say the issue that I had colleagues from Treasury raising is that VAT is one instrument with which you are able to realize collection. I just want to digress a bit to say when Minister of Finance announced the sugar tax, my daughter was 16, was very mad. She actually said, you know, this government is not fair. How can you tax children? So I was like, eh? She says, who drinks, you know, Monster or Powerade other than us? It's not adults. Actually, we are now taxing children. But I'm saying, be that as it may, the argument I'm hearing Treasury saying is that this is one instrument where you are able to collect more tax than any other. But we're saying here we deal with issues of dignity. You know, we're talking about children, school kids, especially. But have we ever asked ourselves, women in farms, what conditions do they go through? So it's not an issue of girl child. It's a women's issue. And I went to a high school, or some of you know it. You could have said some of those children come from families who are not so poor, maybe the missing middle. They had to use toilet papers as opposed to pens. Because that is one item that families, when they are faced with the education, you know, cost of fees and something, is something that they could sacrifice. But the consequences of that to their health in the long term. So when we raise this issue, it has got both the health and the education dimension, but also societal development. And we're therefore saying that's for this one. If it's the issue of leakages, one member said, you know, it's not passed. If it means women must toy to Monica, we will do so. And if it's about how we deal with your retail sector and how they push up the cost, I think from an advocacy point of view, we will do so. For me, it can't be the reason for saying that can't be the instrument. I actually think it can. But also remember that it also deals with an issue of dignity for women. Because if you look at it, a lot of us may have not disaggregated the impact of so many things in society as it relates to women. And until we do so, you know, there was an instrument that Phumzile Mlambo usually used on the workshops with women. He says, just tell me what is it that you do on your 24-hour day as a woman. Some of those things are issues that everyone takes for granted. But for a woman, it counts. And in most instances, never remunerated. Because it's a given that when you come home, you find food. The amount of labor you spend cooking that food. So, while appreciating the argument, but we're saying as a caring government and as a caring legislature, it's one instrument that when it comes to women's health, women's rights, it's a very progressive that can be taken by this government. And actually, it's a firm proposal. So it's not, you were saying, is it a matter of free sleeping? Is that on this one? No. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to National Treasury for the presentation. I think my issue is basically to say, you know, knowing that you are going to come and present to us, it is even good to know how much revenue is are you collecting already from sanitary pads, so that you also have an understanding of how much the government is receiving from that. But that is not actually the prime issue. The issue is that women have rights to sanitary pads, and it's not a matter of we shouldn't. You actually shouldn't be even having this argument. Yours is actually to find ways of getting this revenue you're going to lose, because obviously you are going to lose revenue, but you have to find a way as a government to say, how do we make sure that we gain this revenue that we're going to lose. So it's not about whether we should or we shouldn't. I think when you walk out of here, you should have an understanding that we want zero rating, and the revenue has to find a way to say, if you lose that revenue, where are we going to get it from? But it shouldn't be from planning self-repairs for women. And also, what the honourable member mentioned is that, like the president said, the children should have pads at school. So these are two things. We need to see that young people have pads at school, and also we have to address the issue of pads. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to say the presentation from Treasury is like very scanty, but I do appreciate that you did the presentation. You had us to come and do the presentation despite the scantiness of it. Firstly, you must understand that you're dealing with 52% of the population. It is not just anyone. 52%. And that 52%, I normally do a body structure, that your 48% in your body, it's almost healthy. Because most of the interest, if we can unpack the economic slide, which you normally do, the way you do your budgeting, you favor men than women. I mean, if I make a breakdown in shops, you see the men's clothes have quality, and women's clothes don't have quality. You know, it's the same. So I don't want to get there, but I want to address the issue of the economy generally. And you're dealing with a population where 52% of your body is ill. That is women being ill-treated by the economy generally. So that's where we should start. So your economy will never grow when 52% of the population is not healthy. Worldwide, not only in South Africa, but worldwide. That's where we go through. Then the issue of the rights and dignity, when we're still talking about this small thing within the economy, which is women affect, you know, how women are affected by their menstrual periods. Every day women are affected. But you go to a shop, they only sell 8 pence, about 50 rand. When do you get 50 rand for 8 pence? Sometimes your periods are 2 weeks. Periods. Where do you get eight a day you use 8 pence?
how many times, I mean, throughout you even endless, there's still that income gap between male and female. And given the majority of women in South Africa are casual workers, how much do they earn? So that is why we're pushing a VAT-free, VAT must fall on these sanitary pads. Not only sanitary pads, but every product that women use for menstrual meaning, yeah, all the products that women use for sanitary pads. Then the second thing is the issue of the president, that the indigent must be given those pads. You don't put them in toilets, you give it to them because they're not here in Parliament. In Parliament, I can afford to buy those pads. If you reduce the price of those pads, the reduction of the price of the pets and the vets must go. Those two. The reduction and the vets and the indigent. Schools must have those pets every day. And there is no teacher who will steal the pets because the pets will be cheaper. They will be able to afford them. But you take the pets now to schools, the teachers will steal them because it is expensive for even teachers to buy the pets. So every woman has the right to have those pets by the method that we are a caring government and we want education for all. If we really want women to perform in schools, it means that we must provide those things. And those things make women not to perform because their dignity is like exposed to other. I mean, you choose their self-confidence won't be there every time they are engaged in those periods. So it means that women generally will never be best in any field that we put them through. From primary to tertiary institutions, women will not perform very well, exactly equally like their counterparts. So it is one way of ensuring that women never participate in the economic sphere, especially in all the areas that men were participating in. You know? So, it's Mr. who?
Bobo.
Mr. Bobo, can you please understand? Women's struggle. You know, there are men that were progressive in the struggle, like O.R. You know, there are men that were progressive. I think you must learn from those men that they understood. And it is people like, you know, you know the thing of saying there's a women responsive budgeting in different departments. It doesn't happen, so we don't want to be a day, you know. So it shouldn't. You shouldn't even start talking about that. I mean, I can even ask you how many women you have empowered. You know, this morning. Is it this morning or yesterday? Yesterday, that they came and gave a representation. They didn't even have statistics how many women they have empowered. At treasury level, you control the main treasury supply chain management. You know? It used to show that you never take women serious. And Mama, what's your name?
Yanga.
Okay, Mputa. Mawam, Lamadota, Azalanga with my Mawam, because they know, Ubuchi, Mzaruela, you are a middle class person, you can afford this and that and that. And Umawako used to feel for these young girls, you know, but she would never cover everyone. Even in a school, she wouldn't have covered every woman. She covered those that she saw, but they were the ones that could not tell and who dropped out. You know, so we don't want any young woman to drop out of school because we cannot provide for them. Our government can provide for those things. If condoms can be put everywhere there, I still want to say, because condoms, it is also men that they affect it, you see. That is why they rushed and came with condoms. When they're supposed to supply us with condoms, they give us stories. Women condoms are expensive and all that. It's who? Treasure. You see? But when it's male condoms, they survive just like that. Because male people
that are within. And it is us. So we can continue this way. If it means, I think I will go on the words of Comrade Togozi, Honorable Chair, that says, if we have to do it this time, we'll do that. We will go to National Treasury and demand, you know, sorry, we don't want to do that. We are honorable members, and we are talking to you like honorable members. So we expect you to implement what the President said you must implement. And if you have to find money somewhere, go and sell medicine somewhere in the country. No, no, they can't sell FAA. You can't sell FAA. We have sold enough assets of government. Go and sell, I don't know what, your clothes for us to get. No, no, you can't sell the land. They must go and sell something, the seeds, something that will grow and sell, and you will still have a land. Let's go and plant something and then sell it. But we may not have those.
I'm going to allow two hands. Okay. Number eight, and can you talk for two?
Number eight, everyone has already expressed their opinion on this matter, and I guess it's quite clear and evident she's not listening.
He's not the only one.
Okay. Everybody has heard their thing. It's very clear and evident of what Caucus is actually looking for. What we are then, therefore requesting you to do is to try and look at the best possible way of implementing. But also, one other thing that is important, which is things were actually done earlier before when we got into democracy. It looks like we still need to continue to do gender sensitization within government departments. But already you can hear the complaint about your budgets that are not gender sensitive. And we are actually putting forward an issue of women, and it looks like it's not really receiving proper attention, and it could be issues of being sensitized about issues of gender. And for now, they even take this and put it in the category of an office that is handled by a man. You know, I pity you because when people talk about menstruation to you, you hardly understand what menstruation is all about. Mm-hmm. And all of these things, I think they border on all of those awareness programs that used to happen that are no longer happening. And that's why we are beginning to start to lose the gains. We have actually made so much of progress, like Honorable Jim indicating how sensitive, gender sensitive the males of the ANC used to be, like Oa Tambo. In South Africa, we used to have even males, more and more males really having gender sensitive and responding accordingly to issues of gender. So let's not lose the gains. Let's actually work in such a way that we will be in the position to build on what exists already. But the point is actually, points have been put forward, and I think it's a matter of really reviewing this that we are supposed to actually present today.
The last speaker. Follow up. Chair, I just want to check with the treasury. How many departments do you monitor on issues of their budget being gender or being women responsive? How many can you give us, if you have, can you give us your monitoring system and how much are you doing it? The other thing I would want the treasury to check is the calculation of how much will you as treasury lose if the 52% depends on treasury. 52% in everything, like if they lose school, they will depend on grants. Everything will depend on the treasury. Because by doing this, we are also trying to intervene in issues of women not depending on treasury so that they are able to fend for themselves in future. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to allow anything. And there's one thing I've just noticed. Someone has come in and all of a sudden my right has become very rowdy. She's always like that. That person, she knows herself. Before you even respond, you know, we are lawmakers here. We the minister is our colleague. And that is the reason why we want him to come. And every time we ask for the minister, he sends you people. And really now it's people are checking. Because you would understand, because he has door to door with us. And he understands what we are talking about. So we expect from here, I'm going to respond. But we think we need the treasurer to come to us with the minister. Next time. We want to speak to him. Because it's just not fair as if I am taking you and you are doing administrative work. It's nothing. Can you respond?
Let me just start by saying that the minister is at cabinet, so obviously that's why he's not here. And okay. And I think just to assure members, you know, some of us I think have fought for this country to be free of gender discrimination, non-racism, and so on. I think it's not fair when people don't know us to make allegations like those. I don't think it's fair at all. I don't think it's fair. Okay? But having said that, yeah, I think we hear the issues. I think that there certainly was some misunderstanding today on what we came to talk about. We were given a narrow scope. I think that it would be a very good idea, Chair, to actually get and have a fuller discussion. We could have the facts, the data that people have requested. These things are not as easy just to get because we have to talk to our colleagues in SARS. We have to make sure that this item somehow is captured on their data systems so we can get the numbers. And clearly, I think, even on our expenditure side, to look at across departments where the spending is for what. Okay. Because I think, let's not conflate the issues of our general representatives of the Treasury and so on. I think those are different issues, and they must be dealt with. We don't disagree there. But in a sense, I think today we hear you. So what I want to suggest is, how can we continue to engage? I think certainly, I think all of us here fully accept this is an issue of dignity and human rights. There's no doubt about that. There is an issue of access, but we still can't get away from the issues. How do you target to get sanitary pads to schools, to hospitals? I mean, a lot of members spoke about that. That has particular mechanisms where perhaps you have to use the Department of Education. Then, of course, members raise what happens during holidays. We need to get to find the best mechanisms to do that. I think the issue on, and I must say, I think it's really dangerous to talk about that much for. None of us may, you know, you won't have a government. At a time when tax morality has been attacked, I think that what we tried to put forward was just some of the considerations and difficulties of tax policy and the difficulties. We're not saying it's impossible, but we're saying let's look at this. Let's obviously have be fully informed on the issues. The tax policy also has other committees involved. We were trying to put across general issues on tax. We can certainly give you all the numbers if you want to go into that kind of detail. We'd love to do that. We, in fact, produce tax statistics every year because we stand very strongly by transparency and making this information available. So, Chair, I think I really think we're on the same side in terms of the objective. Nobody here, certainly, and a lot of people like to attack the jailing. It's a hard job when you have to say no because your demands exceed what's available. But the issue, I think, is we are willing to have a constructive engagement. Let's not attack each other. Let's accept each other's vulnerabilities. We all have jobs to do. And I think that we'd be happy to come again and do a more comprehensive presentation. Because I hear you. I mean, when I went on to the second presentation, I thought the committee was in a hurry to know how the budgeting process works. Easy gender sensitive enough. And I'm not saying it's perfect. But certainly, I think it would be worth doing that, even if it's as a separate discussion. So, Chair, I think I'll stop there. But, you know, with the main message that we agree with you, it is a matter of dignity and human rights. But we still have to find the best mechanisms. And we still think that our complexities with the VAT issue, but we can still achieve this objective. And so the question of engaging constructively on this, you understand some of the problems we have with the tax system. And I think certainly not to undermine the tax system, because I really think comments, as I said, like that must fall. I don't think it's the correct thing to say, especially for us who are in government.
I haven't allowed.
Okay. You're continuing. You can talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think as mandated by the women of this country in one of the most events that we attended to and we have consulted with was a roundtable last year in 2015, we'll continue to engage the National Treasury on this issue, on the removal actually of fat in the sanitary products. And we don't think we are apologetic as members of parliament when we are saying, I think they'll hear us as when we say VAT on sanitary products must fall. I think they'll hear us very clear. But for now, I think we'll hold on that slogan. We'll engage them further. Yes, I don't have a mandate, but my proposal will engage them further as the National Treasurer on this issue. But I think we must fast track it because it has been on the platform for some time now. And Jefferson, I think as a multi-party committee, we must make sure that we implement what the president has called by the president on the issue of the free sanitary showers to the school's children. I think as part of our responsibility, I think we must call the Department of Education. We must call the Department of Social Development and the Department of Health. It is our responsibility. Because that thing is not happening in schools. We have seen normally consulting on schools and visiting our schools and our constituency bureau. It is not there. So we must call them as a matter of agency and check your program so that we can be able to coordinate that meeting. And I don't want to respond on the issue of gender responsive budgeting and gender mainstreaming. We were engaged with our Treasury yesterday. Mr. George, who was sitting here, was part of us. Actually, he excused himself before the meeting ends yesterday. But we have deadlocked yesterday in terms of these two main issues. But we said going forward, we'll engage you, we'll engage people who are decision makers, and we'll also engage the Department of Women, because one of the issues that they raised with us is that they are pleased with the National Treasury in terms of the gender responsive budget. But I think it's a work in progress to deal with the mental needs.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, we need a program of action on this issue in particular, because if you remember, it was done in roundtable of 2015. We went to the parliament, women's parliament in Johannesburg. There was a specific plea from a young girl from the university. So we cannot actually leave it to this prolonged discussion that we don't know where it's going to take us to. And I want to again add to what Greg said, we should not be intimidated. If Treasury does not want us to say that must fall
on sanitary towels. They must actually become progressive and speed up the process. And I'm suggesting that we should actually have an urgent meeting of women and have all women in parliament make motion on sanitary towels. That is the first action that we must take. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Chair, I just want to say, like, Treasury said, my first presentation, you said, removing the right, the bet, that means also the rich are going to be, they're going to benefit from that. I just want to raise the issue that, like, you know, we are not the first country that is raising the issue of zero bet. You have the first world country coming up and saying, this is not actually about the monetary value of it. It's just the right dignity and also discrimination, because they're not looking at it from the fact that women cannot afford sanitary rights. They're just saying it's a right thing to do.
Thank you. We haven't closed the meeting. Why are you leaving now? We haven't. It's not a yet. Okay. You know, I just wanted to say, is it Mr. Momo?
M-O-M-O.
I'm very disappointed that you feel offended when people express themselves. If you come to a meeting and people express themselves, they are not attacking you, they are attacking the system. Yes. That's what they're talking about. Now, for you to say this is dangerous and all it and all that, we are lawmakers. And we are representing the people here. And we talk for what the people are saying. So we are not attacking you for the sake of attacking you. And we know that you are the opposite gender. You don't understand what we're talking about. If you knew what it means, I'm 76 years old now. But when you talk about what we went through from the rural area, some of us grew up in rural areas. Some people don't even know how we went to school and what we used and all this. So please, don't feel offended. Thank you very much. In any case that you came, and we still need you, and we need the minister. I'm going to emphasize on that. We need the minister. It's not on. We can't. When people have to come to us as our colleagues, as our ministers, that we have deployed there, and now they don't want to come to us. I get offended. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everybody.